Jose, what's going on, man?
How's it going?
I'm doing really good, man. This is pretty special. This is a special episode. You know, so this is In the Zone with Deremy and Jose. And, you know, we had told our listeners that this is college football month, which it still is. It still is. But looking to switch it up and have a special guest come on to talk a little hockey with us.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring Deremy back to the sport.
So. He is. And so far you're successful of during the you know, these return, these bubble sports. I don't know what the term is.
Yeah, I mean, you
know. But this is, I've watched the NHL more than the NBA and more than MLB.
Yeah, this year's been great. Like the return of hockey was really, they did a great job with it, and you know, and the playoffs are off to a pretty good start. So it's been really, really exciting.
So it's been fun to fly. That was a really good game last night, watching the Flyers get that win over Montreal. That's what's so awesome, though. And I think you said it before, and a lot of hockey fans I know have said it, that when you see a 1-8 matchup in basketball, it's pretty much, especially since it's gone 7 games now, you're like, you kind of know, you don't really see upsets, and it's like, okay. But that was a competitive, Montreal's taking it to them.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the great thing about hockey, man. Like a goalie can steal you a series, no matter if you're the 8th seed or not. So that's awesome.
But Jose, we have our special guest has joined us, and this is an absolute treat for us. From 97.5 in Philadelphia to the Flyers Network, the one and only Mr. Jason Martinez. Jason, thank you so much for joining Jose and I.
Boys?
Not much.
Nothing,
man.
Much, just enjoying that game.
Yeah, definitely. We were just kind of talking about it a little bit, and yeah, I'm excited right now for hockey.
Well, you better be. You got a ton of it.
Yeah.
It's finally back, and it's been going on like a week and a half now, and I think there's been – I guess it's been about 11 days. I think there's been probably 65 games. It's crazy.
Yeah, I love it.
But it's awesome.
I love it. And then working from home, I can just kind of just throw on the game at 11 o'clock when that Boston – and the Carolina game was on. I just, you know, it's just great. I just love it. And that's the thing. It's like all day at that. It's like 3 games a night, and it's awesome.
Yeah, the thing it's going to be weird, because this is like opening a door to a new way to consume the game, because you're getting them basically, you know, since the start of the whole tournament, you're getting games from noon till about 2 in the morning.
Yep.
And we were without it for 140 days. So
yeah.
This is a great way to bring it back into our lives. But when we get to like a conference final and there's only 4 teams left, we're going to feel like there's not that much hockey on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I've likened it to a Las Vegas buffet at the casino. And when it started, like you go to the buffet and you're like, I got to pace myself. Right. But like, I didn't even just go to the buffet with a chair. I just pulled a chair to the buffet.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't go with a plate. I just pulled up a chair and just sat at the buffet with wheels on it. And I'm just sliding back. I'll go watch the West now. I'll go watch, you know, Calgary play, or I'll go over here today and I'll watch Carolina, you know, kick the snot out of the Rangers. It's just been awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
No. And Jason, our podcast is, you know, a classic sports show where we connect the past to the present. And a couple weeks ago, we broke down the 94 Eastern Conference Finals, Game 6, you know, the Messier's guarantee, the hat trick, you know, Rangers Devils. And, you know, Jose, like he said before you came on, I was a bigger, you know, hockey fan, still a Flyers fan, but I'm getting back into the NHL. But the 90s were both of our times of really watching the.
Yeah, the 90s were a great decade for the NHL. It was a lot of fun. I think that the game was, and the league was at its peak in 94 for a lot of reasons. The Rangers won the cup, and despite the fact that I was no Rangers fan in 1994, it was good for the game because, you know, it's a huge market and they had huge names. And you just mentioned Messier, and they had one of my all-time favorites, and Mike Richter, and great players on that team with Brian Leetch and Adam Graves and Stephane Matteau. You go down the line. And I think that I think people would be naive to think that the EA sports games, the video games, didn't have an effect on it either. That made people that were gamers at that time, which is totally different than now, but that made people understand and know who guys were on every team. Like, people knew who a guy on the East Coast knew who, you know, Cliff Ronning or Pavel Bure was because of that game. They knew Alexander McGillney in Buffalo. They knew Sergei Fedorov because he was great in the game. And I think that, like, that helped people know the names, the important names of the game. And I love the 90s. The hockey that was played, it was heavy. It was tough. It was mean. And there was so many great players. And the game's different now. I like the game now because it's so fast and so much speed and skill, and the goaltending is so good. But the 90s were probably my heyday as well.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that 100% because that's exactly what got me into hockey was the video games. I knew all the guys. I can name six guys that were on that 94, 95 Detroit team because that's the team I used to play with on NHL 95. And once I started watching it, and then once that 93, 94 season came on, and that playoff run the Rangers went on, I was hooked. Like, it was over. I was done.
Yeah, Gary Thorne and Bill Clement doing the games on ESPN. It was, you know, Barry Melrose. It was huge. It was the game at that point was so big. And then, you know, they had a couple lockouts and, you know, a shortened seasons. Eventually they had missed an entire season in 03-04. Yeah. And then, you know, that's what makes this return to play even more crazy, that because in Gary Bettman's tenure, there's been a lot of mistakes when it came to collective bargaining. And in this return to play, not only did they find a way to work with the players and get the game back on the ice with extreme detail and protocols, but they also found a way to get a new CBA done, which is stunning to me, to go now 6 years to 2026 with labor certainty, a new team coming in the league, and a new TV deal for the U.S.
Yeah, and I think the NHL is in prime position right now to overtake even a league like baseball, who is really struggling right now coming back. And I know for me, I barely watched any baseball, to be honest. It's been all hockey, some basketball, but I just think right now they're in a prime position. For a household like mine, like, baseball was huge, you know, growing up, and the quote unquote, you know, America's pastime. But I think right now hockey's in a prime position to kind of jump over baseball right now.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because baseball, you're right, it was America's pastime, but now baseball has passed its time.
Yep.
Because of their arrogance and their lack of willingness to speed up the game properly. Everything they've done to try and speed up the game has slowed it down. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's going, how is that happening? The sport, the ball is in play in real time, an average of every 4.5 minutes. I can't bring my kids to watch that. They're bored out of their mind. They're like, can we leave? You know? And so I'm not going to spend my money on it. And it's going to be bred out, because if the young kids in America, if it doesn't capture their imagination like it did for generations, then when they get older, they're not going to transfer it down to their kids. Little league numbers are down. The game is boring. There's just nothing happening. Analytics has kicked it right in the balls, and so has the shift. That's part of the reason why everybody's trying to hit home runs and not put the ball in play, and baseball refuses to address it. So hockey's in a good position. Youth numbers and enrollment is way up in USA Hockey. You see girls teams everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's one of the fastest growing sports in America is youth girls hockey. So yeah, I don't know that it's going to overtake baseball anytime soon. Baseball did a record $10.7 billion in earnings last year.
Yes.
The NHL does about 4.5. So I don't know if it's going to overtake it from that standpoint, but in due time, like horse racing fell and boxing fell.
Good point.
So, Jason, sorry about that. Headphones kind of popped out on me. So. But I was going to ask you, you know, we were talking about a good conversation topic, because we like to connect the past to the present. And we, you know, just wanted to really, what stuck out to both Jose and I was looking at 90s Flyers and what could have been in that Eric Lindros versus Bobby Clark in that whole fiasco.
You guys still there?
Hello?
Yeah, I lost you there.
Oh, okay. I was saying I was wanted to talk to you about the Eric Lindros versus Bobby Clark fiasco.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mess. it was unfortunate because, you know, Eric was such a great player and Bob was such a big figure, obviously, in the franchise, still is. I mean, he was the face for so long. And then, you know, Lindros came along and was so dominant, but the team failed to get over the hump. And, you know, with Eric's parents involved, I think that just rubbed a lot of people and especially Clarkie the wrong way in the organization. And it wasn't the way that Clarkie would have done things. And he had a hard time understanding that somebody else would do it that way. I think, you know, had they had a chance to do the whole thing over, I think they would have done things differently, but you know, it is what it is. And Eric's time here ended. And since then they've mended defenses, which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, all said and done, you look at that whole, and I loved Lindros, and I still do. But, you know, you look at what happened in the trade and who they sent to Quebec at the time and then eventually, you know, became Colorado and they won a couple of cups and Peter Forsberg and how great he was. And Eric was unable to get the cup here. He was a spectacle. He was the best player in the world for a good 4 years. But ultimately, it didn't pay off with a cup. And that's hard to swallow because he was an absolute generational player. In my lifetime, there's only been maybe six generational players. And, you know, going Gretzky, generational. Lemieux, generational. Lindros was generational. Then you get into Crosby, probably Ovechkin, and yeah, to me, Connor McDavid. And that's it. Like, people throw around the term generational too often. And out of all those guys, other than McDavid, who's only, you know, 5 years into his career, all of those guys had cups. So that's the hard thing to swallow, is that you had a generational player that was the best in the world and they were unable to get a cup. That's tough. That's tough to take.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you mentioned it, you look at the trade and it was a huge, huge trade. And, you know, I kind of like almost try to relate it to people who really don't watch hockey and never did, almost to like that Herschel Walker trade, you know,
yeah.
Like,
and for one.
Yeah. And people kind of understand it in a way like that. And I can remember at the time, I wasn't like a huge hockey fan, but I can remember watching that and it was on the news. It was like one of the breaking stories. And, you know, somebody had mentioned to me before, it was like, you know, it's like the Flyers getting Shaq. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, that made sense to me. Like, this dude is a big dude and, you know, whatever. But yeah, he brought me to the game. You know, I'm forever grateful that the Flyers got Eric Lindros, because I don't know if I would have became a fan as quickly as I did, because watching him was amazing.
He was a unique specimen, man. And like, I mean, to be that big, that strong, that good of a skater, and have that soft of hands was, and he had a mean streak in him, right, which fit Philadelphia as well. He didn't check guys. He didn't hit guys. He exploded them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, his he took so much contact in his career because he was such a big physical player, and it invited physicality from the opposition, and that's ultimately what shortened his career. Had he played in this generation, he would have had a longer career. But I don't know how the league would respond to his hits nowadays, because he was just so big and so strong that guys would just fly off him. And I guess the league would probably think that was dirty or that was suspendable. And because he was so big, and I don't know how the Department of Player Safety would have handled a player like Eric Lindros in today's game.
No, I think you're right. And I also think, but I look at it, without that, if he didn't have to kind of go through all these players, you know, because especially with concussion protocol now, like, I think I agree with you, his career would have lasted longer. And I think he would have adapted pretty well to this faster paced style of game.
Oh yeah. Cause he could skate and he created so much space. in today's game, he would have created so much space for little speedy players around him, like Konechny and that kind of guys, that it would have been unreal because he had great vision too, and he could distribute the puck. So yeah, you're right. In today's game, it would be really interesting to see that. Obviously we can't, but, and there's no comparable to Lindros in the game that, as far as I know, that's coming, or that there's nobody in the league that's comparable with that size and that power. So yeah, he was tremendous. He was so much fun to watch because he just destroyed people.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, like when you mentioned his hands, like the soft hands and stuff, because everybody thinks that Lindros, you know, is a goal scorer. Like, for me, he was a great passer, like you mentioned, and he had great hands, especially like his backhand. Oh, his backhand was so nice, and I can just remember him coming down the ice and just like going outside and just throwing a backhand pass, and it was always on the money, man. And yeah, I agree 100%, man. I think in today's game, he would have so much space, man. He, his numbers, because even in this quote unquote dead puck era, he was putting up numbers, you know, and I can't imagine what he would do now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He tremendous player. I mean, the hands were so good too. So I have no fear that he would be a guy that wouldn't be able to score on today's goaltending. He would absolutely be able to, you know, you look at generations, you go back to the '80s and you watch those games, and we watched a lot of them over the pause because we had nothing else to watch. Yeah. You look at it, and it looks like such a different game, and it was so much slower, and you know, the goaltending was so different. I mean, they're all stand-up goalies and small equipment. A lot of the goalies were, you know, no taller than 6 foot. They're like 5'10", you know, guys like Mike Vernon and a lot of those guys. So, and even this day and age of goaltenders being so technically proficient, he still would have been a guy that found the back of the net.
No, and now you look at it with that Lindros trade. Now, the Flyers were looking to make that deal, and they eventually got it. But the Rangers were also competing at that time to make a deal to get Lindros. And I know, you know, we're all Philly guys and hate the Rangers, but do you think if the Rangers make that deal, if they got the cup in 94, but do you see that being a dynasty? I know Neil Smith talked about that a lot, the former GM for the Rangers. But do you think, Jason, that the Rangers would have had a dynasty if they would have gotten that trade off?
Maybe, because they had the goalie. They had, you know, they had Richter at that time, and the Lindros whole arbitration thing happened obviously prior to 94. So possibly what they would have lost in the trade may have been a detriment, and maybe they wouldn't have won the cups. So you're not sure exactly, you know, what the pieces would have looked like for the Rangers, how the dynamic would have changed. Eric was still young in 94. You had Messier at that time, who was their leader. So you just don't know how they would have shaped the team had Lindros been a part of it. So that's the one element you'll never know. But I mean, if you just plugged him obviously into that Rangers team in 94, then yeah, they could have been a team that could have won a multiple cups. I'm surprised they didn't win another one, but that's New York. I mean, they don't win them very often, but they won a big one in 94.
Yeah. No, I agree. Cause they would have lost a lot in that trade if they make that deal. I mean, they're losing players like Imani, Kovalev was on that deal. And, you know, it was Richter or the Beezer going in that deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think they would have traded Richter, though, and a couple first-round picks and a lot of money. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they would have – I don't even know if they win the Cup in 94 if Lindros is there. But, I agree. It would have been – hard to watch as a Flyers fan.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And it would have hurt because the arbitration came down to the Flyers and the Rangers, and you would have lost out on a generational player. So it would have hurt from sometimes, even though you never had him, and had he gone to the Rangers, you'd feel like you lost him. You lost something you never even had, and that's difficult to swallow.
Yeah, I feel like that almost with Patrick Kane and how close the Flyers were to getting Patrick Kane. And it's like every time I used to see him play, it's like, man, if he would have been here with Giroux and all of them, like, man, that would have been amazing to watch too. So yeah, well, I get that.
Coin flip.
yeah, I know.
But Jason, when you look back at what would you say was the biggest reason why those 90s Flyers, and they got to the Cup Finals in 97, but what was the biggest reason why they never kind of got over the hump? To get that cup?
Goaltending. I mean, the other element of it too is when you get to a cup, you need a little luck. And I dug into this over the NHL pause. and I wanted to look at what's happened with the Flyers since they won the back-to-back cups 45 years ago. And I can't find a comparable in any sport because they went to the cup final six times, most in the NHL, since they won back-to-back cups in 74 and 75. And every team that they met in the cup was a dynasty, but the first year of their dynasty.
Yep.
It's amazing. So they go in 76 and they take on the Montreal Canadiens after winning back-to-back cups. Canadiens sweep them. They win that cup and they win three more. So the Canadiens win four straight cups. First one against the Flyers in 76 of that run with that core. They go back to the cup final in 1980 against the Islanders. The Islanders, that's the first cup of four straight cups. They go to the cup final in 85 and 87 against Edmonton. They lose to both of those. Edmonton wins five cups in 7 years, right? 97, they get Detroit, and Detroit wins three cups in 5 years. And another one eventually a little later, but the main core of that team won three cups in 5 years. Then you go in 2010, and you get Chicago. It's their first of three cups in 5 years. You faced five different opponents in those six finals, and they won with the core that they played against a total of 20 cups. It's unreal.
Yeah, I don't know if you posted that somewhere on social media, but yeah. I did see that and I was blown away because as I was looking back, looking at that stat, and I was like, wow, they did. And not even, and to add to that, even trying to get to the cup, they had to get through a team like New Jersey, who went on to win, you know, three cups in the 90s, I think it was. And so it was a lot of great teams all around them, you know, especially this team here.
Yeah, there were some great teams. I mean, look in the 90s, yeah, you had New Jersey was a great team and some other powerhouses in the East and that you had to deal with. And but, you know, sometimes getting to the championship, there's a little luck involved who you get as an opponent. And they just drew teams that were on the very beginning of a dynasty in each of their eras. It's stunning that it worked out that way, but you know, to get to six cups is no easy task. You get there to win though, but you can't win it unless you get there. It was a feat to get there. They have the third best playoff record or third most playoff wins of any team in the NHL since they came in 1967. And just the two cups, but maybe they're a team that can get back into that echelon now again, where they can be competing for cups and get to a final and roll the dice and see what happens. Or maybe they can be that team that wins their first cup and becomes a dynasty. You never know.
Yeah, it blows my mind how the city, you know, they always look at the Eagles and, you know, obviously that's, you know, I guess Philly's a football town, but the Flyers have been the most successful team in the city for a long time, you know. I think you had mentioned this in one of the shows in Flyers, you know, the podcast. And I was listening to it and I was like, wow, I was like, you know, that's so true. Cause they've been relevant since this era we're talking about now, till today. And they went a couple of years there where, you know, they weren't as good, but man, they've been pretty good for a long time. And that's why it blows my mind how this city, I mean, there's a lot of Flyers fans, don't get me wrong, but I for me, it's like, this is probably the best franchise in the city.
Yeah, well, they're the winningest. There's no doubt about that. They have the highest winning percentage. They've gone to the most finals. And, you know, it's funny because they catched a lot of crap. And they'll catch crap from Sixers fans. And I'm a Sixers fan. Yeah. But, like, come on, Sixers fans. You got to realize that team has got – look, they won a title in 83. They lost in 80 in the finals. They won the title in 83. They went to one other final in 2001. They've missed the playoffs far more than the Flyers have missed the playoffs. And, you know, the perception is that the Flyers haven't done anything in 45 years. The Phillies are the losingest franchise in the history of sport.
Yeah.
And then the Eagles, you know, when Andy Reid came in, that was a different era and they had a good run there for a lot of those years. But the Flyers certainly win the most in this town, have always won the most in this town. But they got to get back over the hump and they got to bring a title back because they're the team that has gone the longest now without one.
No, that's very true. Very true. Now, I wanted to ask you, Jason, because when you look at a lot of this rivalry or kind of, you know, contention between Bobby Clark and Eric Lindros, has a lot to do with his family. But a lot of this was kind of known about Lindros, you know, with his parents' involvement when he was in the O. back in minor league hockey. And I'm wondering, do you think like that should have been a red flag for the Flyers organization, like to kind of see what was coming, or not really?
Look, I think there's a lot of parental control in junior and in youth hockey. That's not abnormal because they're kids. You know, when Eric was playing in Oshawa, I mean, he started playing there when he was 15. So, of course, he had some, you know, his parents were involved. And I don't know that you could have predicted they would have been involved at the NHL level like they were when he was in junior and playing for Oshawa. So, you know, and then, well, I mean, there could have been a red flag, I guess, when he said he wouldn't go to Quebec. But could you blame him? I mean, at that time, Quebec was the franchise was falling apart. Yep. They ended up moving. Not only that, but from a marketing standpoint, a player of his caliber in Quebec didn't make sense, not to mention the Canadian dollar at the time. So I understand why he did what he did. It did rub a lot of people the wrong way. I think it was held against him in Hall of Fame voting for a bit when he determined that he wasn't going to play there and he wasn't going to wear that jersey. So I think that rubbed some of the Canadian media the wrong way. And I get it. I understand why, but I also get it from his perspective, you know, to go there and not be, you know, on the front pages of papers and on the conscious, you know, front lobe of the conscious mind of hockey fans around the world was a smart move for him.
And he's said later on, but that, you know, way after he's retired, that it came down to just he would not have played for that owner. And that owner could have owned the Maple Leafs or whoever. And it wasn't against Quebec. He, you know, lives in Quebec now, has property there, and his wife is French. But he said that it was just really he couldn't stand the owner of the Nordiques at the time.
Yeah, yeah, and well within his rights there too. But even that said, that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, because you see players drafted into the NHL and it's an honor to be drafted, and not, you know, the idea of this draft is that you're not supposed to be able to pick where you go. You know?
Yeah.
So in kind of the spirit of the draft, and he bucked it. So, and look, he got away with it, and eventually he got into the Hall of Fame. So all good on that from that standpoint.
Yeah, and I was just thinking too, like, because again, I was trying to relate it to someone who doesn't watch hockey, right? And it's like, I was trying to think of something to compare it to. And it almost reminded me of like when John Elway was drafted and then he wanted to play for the Colts. And it was almost kind of the same thing. And he kind of saw the writing on the wall and look what happened with that Colts franchise. And but I can remember reading about, you know, Lindros not wanting to go to Quebec and all that. And it was like, it was almost like people were kind of making it out to him. He was like a diva type of player. And, you know, before that was even a thing. And because even you mentioned in juniors, because he was supposed to play for Sault Ste. Marie, right? And he didn't want to play there or something like that. Or the family didn't want him to play there. And that's why they
determined where he went in junior too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's when you started hearing the Lindros family. And it's that rang true for a long time.
Oh yeah. Big time.
And if you look at it, a lot of that, I guess, controversy really blew up, though, that night in Nashville when, you know, he had that injury and they wanted him to, you know, fly home. And pretty much if he would have, could have potentially died. And a lot of that is kind of where you know, his family said that, you know, the Flyers were trying to kill Eric and a lot of different accusations. But it really just got real nasty between the two sides.
Yeah, that's when it got really ugly. And he kind of threw a trainer under the bus and things got really bad at that time. That was just an ugly, ugly situation. It became he said, she said, and it became public. So that was the part that made it even worse, you know. But, you know, and then he came back for the game 7 against the Devils after all that. And they end up losing. And he gets decked by Stevens. It's such a bummer the way it ended, right? I mean, they were on a heater and they're up 3-1 on the Devils in the conference final, and they're going to slay that giant, right? Marty Brodeur and Patrick Elliosh and Kenny Danico and Scott Stevens, who was everybody hated. And to have the Devils come back and to knock him out in game 7, it was just like, oh my God, it's over.
Because I can remember watching that series and and yeah, like you mentioned, they were playing great. Boucher was playing out of his mind, and I can remember a lot of people didn't even want him coming back. Like, they didn't want him to interrupt that momentum the Flyers had. And I felt like that's exactly what happened. Like, he came in, and it was just like they had to change things up, and, you know, and they ended up losing that series.
Yeah. A lot of the guys on that team, I know a lot of them, and I've talked to them about it, said that had he not come back, they would have won it.
There you go.
It became a distraction. And when he played at that time, a lot of guys just stood around and watched him. They played as a team more when he wasn't on the ice at that time. And when he came back, they just stood around and watched him. Now, he came back in game six, and he was their best player on the ice. But
yeah,
but they eventually lose it in game seven.
And now when you look at it, and I know a lot of thoughts on Bobby Clarke as a player, but even as a GM, you know, he was with the organization for so many years. But when you see, and now Jose and I were talking about this like a couple weeks ago, how, you know, there's captains in all sports, and it means something, but it means a little bit more when it comes to team sports and hockey. And to televise, you know, stripping the C off of Lindros's jersey, like,
that was spiteful.
Yeah. You know, just what do you think of when you see like Bobby Clarke in that light?
I think Bob would even admit now that that wasn't his finest moment. He was caught up in it. He was pissed off. And Bob's a competitor, even post-retirement. You know, he was an intense guy, Clarkey, and he had had enough. But I think that he would even say now that that wasn't my finest decision to invite the camera crew in to see the stitching being taken off and being sewn onto Eric Desjardins' jersey. Yeah, I don't think that he would he'd make the same call, that, you know, today.
Yeah, that it made him look bad too, you know, and
yeah, it made the organization look bad. Yeah, it really did.
There you go. Yeah, it did. And again, for that time, the Flyers had a lot of success, man, and it was. For me, it was really heartbreaking, man, to see it end like that. And, you know, with all the injuries and all the concussions. And so let me ask you this, Jason. Like, was it more – because there you mentioned the issue in Nashville, which was obviously, like, the tip of the iceberg. But was Lindros more upset, like, with – you know, you mentioned a couple of trainers and stuff like that. Like, was it all, like, the concussion stuff? Like, because I read also that, like, his father wrote a letter to Ed Snyder and – you know, detailing all of these like issues with training, with the training staff and all that. What was it like for me, it wasn't just Nashville. It was just a culmination of all that stuff. Was it all the concussion stuff and how he was being treated and thrown back out there, stuff like that?
I think from their perception, it was. I think Eric was getting a lot of dialogue in his ears that I don't know how accurate it was. So, you know, his parents were so involved and, you know, that's why it got nasty between the organization and his parents, and they were filling his head with things as well. I'm not sure how accurate they were. I wasn't with the team at the time, but there was a perception on one side of one thing and a perception on the other side of another. And you know, pro sports teams don't like have the finger pointed at them for things like that, you know, especially a team like the Flyers that, you know, is a first-class organization.
Yes.
So that really was, you know, a burr in their saddle, kind of going, really? I mean, we do things the right way around here, and you're accusing us of this? So I think that really rubbed them the wrong way. So there was fault on both sides. I think both sides handled it poorly, and I think they know that. But I'm not sure exactly what the biggest issues were for Eric. I don't think we've ever dug into it since, but and I don't think they ever will. It's all kind of bygones be bygones, but yeah, I think that was the kind of the gist of it, was that, you know, the organization really got their hair up at the accusations, and whether they were founded or unfounded, I'm not sure.
And rightfully so. Like, I wouldn't want someone pointing fingers like that at my organization either. And I think you mentioned like Bobby Clarke, like him being like a competitor, stuff like that. I just felt like that did it for him, you know. And even Ed Snyder was coming out making statements as well, like, you know. So again, the first class organization, a very proud organization, and I agree, like, watching that, it was just, again, it was hard to watch as a fan.
Yeah, it was a bad time for the team. It really was, because, you know, you had the house that Eric built, Yep. The I guess the FU Center initially.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out, or the Core State Center, I guess it was originally.
It was, yes.
Yeah, good call.
And he packed that building, and it didn't pan out in a cup. And, you know, as competitive as Clarkie was, so was Mr. Snyder.
Yep.
I mean, he was a guy that did things the right way, put his money where his mouth is, wanted to win, didn't want to hear excuses. And, it didn't work out. And I think he was as disappointed. He was probably more disappointed than anybody, because the organization meant so much to him that, and to get that player and it not working out with a title, I think it's one of the things that I'm sure in his last days that he was he's still kind of perplexed by.
Yeah. And the big thing with this, and just going back to like just Flyers acquiring Lindros again, like, and how important it was for not only for the Flyers, what I look at is how important it was for four other franchises almost. Like that, the impact of him coming out and being traded, it was so huge. And you mentioned earlier, you know, Quebec and what it did for, you know, reasons why he didn't want to play there. Obviously, they were the laughingstock of the NHL for like 5 years there. But his impact on that organization was just as huge, I think, or even more than it was for the Flyers. And because the next year after that trade, they're instant competitors. And, you know, from all the players they got from the Flyers. And so my question is, I guess, like, you know, say the Flyers don't make that trade and they keep all these players, like looking at a guy like Peter Forsberg, who I loved. I thought he was an amazing player. You know, the Flyers keep Forsberg and all those guys. Like, what do you think the Flyers would have been after non-Lindros trade?
You got to think that they probably would have had just as good, if not better, a chance to win a cup, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Forsberg was that good. I mean, even when he came to the Flyers, he was over a point-per-game player, and he couldn't even find a skate to fit his foot.
Yeah.
And he was clearly on the back nine of his career when he came to the Flyers and then eventually went on to Nashville. He was an incredible player, and it's a shame that we didn't get him in his prime. But yeah, I think that the team, with all they gave up, Mike Ricci, I mean, the list goes on and on. I think that they would have been a team absolutely that would have been in a final or two.
I agree.
That's something. Now, Jason, when you look, you know, Bobby Clarke was GM over, you know, a couple stints in Philly, but for about 19 seasons, where do you look at his, like, how would you assess his tenure as GM for the Flyers? Would you, you know?
Mixed bag. It's a mixed bag because there's a lot of years there that he, you know, did go take teams to the finals. He hired Mike Keenan, you know, after he retired. That year after he retired and moved into the front office, he convinced Mike Keenan to come. Mike Keenan took him to two cup finals. Just like we said before, though, you know, he was up against the best team ever assembled in hockey in that 85 and 87 Oiler team.
Right.
And then he had to go through the rebuild, which is why they went and got Lindros in the deal and build another team that, you know, was favored in a Stanley Cup final in 97. The one thing that Bob overlooked a little bit was the goaltending. And, you know, after they traded Hextall away when they got Eric initially, and then they got Hexie back, Hexie wasn't the same Hexie was in the first stint, but he did get him to another final. I mean, Hexie was the goalie in 97. But, you know, there's a lot of years there where they could have got Cujo, but they went and got Beezer, or, you know, they didn't get the right guy. So that ended up being the Achilles heel for some of those really good teams. The fact that Lindros, LeClaire, Renberg, Desjardins, that one of that team never won a cup as good as they were, is almost stunning. You know, that line is one of the most dominant lines in the history of the game. And if you have that line, and they had a pretty good supporting cast, the fact that they didn't win a cup is amazing to me. But Bob had a lot of really good years, but he also knew when to step away. And you got to give him credit for that. They let Hitchcock go early in that 1 year. Bob stepped down at the same time. Paul Holmgren came in, and, you know, and Holmgren actually was an executive of the year at one point as well. Did a good job. I mean, to pull off that Pronger trade, and assemble a team with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter and the drafting and development that they were doing at that time was amazing. But, you know, they had a little bit of bad luck in 2010, you know, with the goalies getting injured and, you know, Bush gets injured. If Bush doesn't get injured, they probably win that cup. But
I agree.
You know, he did get injured, and Michael Layton was good in the conference final. I mean, he had three shutouts against the Montreal Canadiens in the conference final. Just when he got to the final, he couldn't stop a beach ball from the blue line. That was the problem. So,
why do you? Oh, go ahead, Jose.
I was just going to say that 2010 team is probably my favorite Flyers team. You know, like I just they were just fun to watch, man. But again, like it was always the same issue, that goaltending, and it was just really frustrating as a fan to see that. And you know, and I agree with like Bobby Clarke, like in regards to like being a GM, I think he did a good job. But you know, at the time, the Flyers were a team, especially in the 90s, if there was a free agent, they were one of the teams always linked to big free agents. Like they always stepped up. And even if it was from like, I don't even know, Chris Gratton's, like I remember when they got Chris Gratton, I thought, man, this is it. Like, this is the second line they needed, the centerman. And I thought he was going to be the next Lindros, man. And, obviously we were wrong, but I agree. They had the opportunity to get a couple goalies there, and man, what could have been, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, whenever a big name was available, Ed Snyder's wallet was always involved.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, when the salary cap came in, that changed that dynamic.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, that mitigated what he could do from just a spending standpoint, and not only him, but a lot of other teams. But yeah, if there was a big name out there, they went after him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wanted to win. It's why you know, the team had the fan base had this team's back, is because you knew the owner was like you, but had the wallet and was willing to spend it no matter what, you know. And people love an aggressive owner, and he was. So they were never going to lose because the owner wasn't going to pay. And you went to go through Norman Brayman's years and Harold Katz with the Sixers and all those years, and you know, ownership's cheap. The Phillies and the unknown ownership at that time would never pay big bucks for a player. And here you had Mr. Snyder, this renegade running the Flyers, owning the team, that was like, if I got a chance to get a good player, I'm bucking up.
Yeah.
And he never, never was a guy that wasn't going to spend money. And when you had the other three teams being run by owners that were not likable, he was the king of the mountain.
Yeah.
Well, for me, that's kind of – I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, and rest his soul, Ed Snyder has passed away. But I kind of – it is bizarre to me, like you said earlier, the Flyers aren't as popular as other teams when they've had the most beloved owner. And I feel like a big part of that looks at, in my opinion, when Bobby Clarke was GM for so long, and he kind of stayed a little too loyal to those Broad Street Bullies and didn't kind of adapt.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. In sports, we rip guys for a lack of loyalty, and then we rip them for too much loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, and look, those two teams, you know, look, in 74 and 75, they brought a cup here, and they did it post-haste. They did it quick. They were the first expansion team to win a cup. They won back-to-back. They captured the city. Ed Snyder was the guy with the idea that we're not going to be pushed around. We're not going to be bullied. And it was his vision to say, I don't care what happens. We're never going to be pushed around. We're never going to be embarrassed. So he put together the idea of the Broad Street Bullies. And people in this city fell in love with it because it matched their identity, right?
Yep.
So you look at that, and he felt loyal to those guys because they brought him the greatest trophy in sports. And, you know, if he would have just pitched them aside, I'm sure people would have been like, you know, there's no loyalty. You have no morality. And he had it, and maybe to a fault. But I can't blame the guy for doing it. I really can't. I think he cared about people so much, and people that stood by him and did great for him, that he put his faith in, and they returned it. He was never going to turn his back on them. That wasn't just players. That was people in the organization. Whether it was in marketing or PR or in accounting or whatever. I mean, Marianne Selesky worked for the organization until Ed Snyder passed, because those people were his family. So he didn't look at them as employees. He looked at them as family, and you don't turn your back on family. And he never did.
No, I think a great example of that is, you know, going to Flyers games when I was younger and seeing Barry Ashby's, you know, number up and, you know, retired. I thought he was this legendary player because you see him next to Perrant and Clark. And then as I got older and did the research and seeing now he was a, you know, a very scrappy and a glue guy for the Flyers back in the Broad Street Bully era. But really it was just, you know, that loyalty, like you said, and once he passed away and, you know, what the Flyers do for, you know, that carnival they do every year, it's always been huge and impressive. And I think that was really awesome how he kind of really took to Barry and brought Barry in.
Yeah. And again, it was a member of his family that he lost when that happened. And they decided at that time, okay, let's make something good out of this. And they started the carnival, and teams over around the NHL have emulated it all over the place. And again, he put action and put his money where his mouth is and says, we're going to do this. We're going to do this carnival, and the players are going to be involved. Everybody's going to be involved. It's an organizational DNA element, and they continue to do it to this day. And they raise a ton of money for local charities. And it's great to see that, you know, out of something bad that happened, something good came of it. So he was a great man. I got to know him a little bit in my time working for the team. And I respected the hell out of him because he was such a straight shooter. And I saw the way that that he treated employees and the way that, you know, you hope that your employer treats employees that way. He called everybody by their name. He knew everybody. And you got to realize, I mean, he was a big time. I mean, he's a big wig. And
yeah.
And when he would see the employee, he'd say, how you doing? How's your wife doing? How are your kids? How's soccer going for Emily? Or is Brian doing well playing basketball? He knew everything because he gave a shit, you know? And too many people nowadays don't give a crap. They're all selfish. And especially in professional sports, he was different, totally different.
Yeah, and how can you not play hard for an owner like that, right? Like, I would try to run through a wall for somebody who treated me like that. And it's no surprise that, you know, free agents or whoever it is signed with the Flyers and post-career, they're still here. You know what I mean? They're still here in some type of capacity. And that just, again, speaks to the Flyers organization in my mind.
Yeah, I've become, you know, friends with a lot of guys that played in the 90s through the work that I do and, mm-hmm. you know, a relationship beyond just, you know, being, you know, a broadcaster and a former player. And I've talked to a lot of guys about it and, you know, playing here really meant something to them. It was an attractive location because of him. It was an attractive location because of the loyalty of the fan base, which was also a byproduct of that owner, I think. And, you know, so it meant something and they all adored him. I mean, it was devastating for a lot of players when he passed. Absolutely. And former players. He meant a lot to a lot of people and, you know, in the hockey world. I remember when he passed away, I was doing the radio show at the time with Mike, with Missinelli. And one of the guys that absolutely loved Ed Snyder was Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, so wow.
Yeah, and he had done a lot of work with Ed with the Snyder Youth Hockey Foundation to grow the game in urban communities and in minorities. And Wayne was devastated. And I texted Wayne when I was working with Mike just to ask him if he would come on and share some thoughts about Mr. Snyder. And boom, he responded right away. He's like, let's do it right now. And he came on for a half hour and was just phenomenal. And Wayne's not a guy. When I texted Wayne, he said, yeah, I only got like 5 or 10 minutes. So I'm in the car, but let's do it now. And he was on for a half hour. He couldn't stop talking about him. It was incredible.
So Jason, I might need that Gretzky phone number after the show.
It's one thing I never do. I never share some of those. You always got to get permission to share a contact. Gotcha. I don't even know how I got it, to be honest with you.
Well, Jason, Jose and I like to call us historians, and even just a couple weeks ago, rewatching the history of the Flyers, you know, on YouTube, that really awesome documentary. And I guess it's still, I have to go back to it. It perplexes me because I agree, goaltending is what's really soured, you know, a lot of the end with Bobby Clark and Ed Snyder's tenure together. But it perplexes me because you look in the mid-'80s and when they brought in, like you said, Iron Mike Keenan, but having Pelé, Lindbergh, and then Hextall, how great he played in 87, I don't know if it, you know, you always sometimes you hear the curse of Pelé, Lindbergh, but when you see how, you know, and even with the Broad Street Bullies, with Bernie Parent, like, that was the difference maker. And why did they kind of ignore the importance of goaltending?
Yeah, I don't think they ignored the importance of it. They just didn't identify the right guy too many times. And I don't know why. What seems obvious sometimes may not be obvious to them. And, you know, it wasn't from a lack of, you know, money. Like, they weren't going to go there money-wise. But you're like, Pelly was poised to be great and won a Vezina, got to a final, was so good. I mean, just so good. And his tragic passing was horrific. For me, I was 13 at the time. It was the first time in my life. And I loved him because I was a goalie and I was playing, you know, youth hockey, you know, Pee Wee probably at that time or whatever. And when he passed, I mean, that was the first time in my life that somebody that I really admired and idolized passed away. And it was, I mean, I still have the newspaper articles to this day from what, you know, on the front page of the paper says Pelly Lindbergh brain dead. I still have those. And I remember crying like a baby. And then Hexie came along and was this totally different beast. I mean, just an absolute maniac. And from the strap hanging down off his helmet, this rebel kind of attitude and brashness and playing the puck. It was like, who is this guy? Yeah. He revolutionized the position. Not only that, but he was phenomenal. He was a competitor of the highest level. And a lot of people never knew the competitiveness of goalies until he came because of the way he played the game. And it was, and then, you know, to go through all those other years and not have an elite goaltender in the league that was going to be able to backstop you to a cup was tough. But I mean, Hexie in that first run, I mean, that year in 86, 87 that he had was, oh my God, he was sensational. And I had Ron on my Stick to Hockey podcast about a month ago. And I've gotten to know Ron from, you know, obviously being a player here and then with the organization as an assistant GM and then his general manager years. And, you know, Ron comes off really gruff as a GM. He came off very stoic, right? Mm-hmm. But people don't understand, too. I think he learned a lot from Mr. Snyder in the way he is as a person, because those years early in his career shaped him to be the man that he is. Like, when I got fired from the Fanatic on Halloween last year, it was on a Thursday. And then November 1st, that Friday, I'm just in my kitchen and, you know, I'm going through the range of emotions of being let go and the whole thing, right? And, you know, what's next and all this stuff. And out of the blue, and Ron wasn't with the Flyers anymore. He was already terminated at that point. And I got a text that Friday from Ron, just a really nice text saying, hey, I saw what happened. You know, I'm really sorry to see it. Blah, blah, blah. You were great. I always liked dealing with you and everything. You know, let me know if you need anything. And, like, to me, that meant so much. I mean, Ron was my idol after Pelly. He ended up being my favorite NHL player of all time. And to get that from him at that time for me meant so much. So when I had him on my podcast, I brought it up and I said, I just want to start and, you know, thank you. He's like, for what? And I said, you know, you sent me a really nice text, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, it was my play. You know, I don't like to see anybody lose their job. And we kind of went through his history as a player and, you know, growing up at, you know, turning out to be a goalie and everything. And it was just a great conversation. And I just liked the man so much. He made some mistakes here and he admits them and he falls on the sword for him. But again, when you get to know the man behind the job or the man behind the mask, I got so much respect for him. I really admire the guy that he is.
No, I actually just, me and Jose were talking. I listened to that episode of the Stick to Hockey podcast the other week and hearing you give more of the backstory, because I heard you open with that, because I was excited to see Hextall on and you guys having that, and hear you give more of the backstory. That really is a great story and a touching story.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It meant so much to me at the time. It really did, you know. I was getting a lot of people were reaching out, and they all meant something. But to see it come from a guy that I admired so much, you know, taking me back to when I was a kid, to get that, you know, it means a lot. It means a lot to somebody, you know, at a time when, you know, you got a lot of uncertainty going on. You don't know what's next. You know, I was raw. It was a day later. I wasn't expecting to get terminated. And, you know, that came out of the blue. The show was doing great. We were number two in the market, 0.2 of number one. And, you know, just things happen. I get it. And I've worked in radio a long time. It's, you know, it's not the first time. It's not the last time. So you look at it, and but you don't know what's next. And, you know, I look down and I got three kids and, you know, I got a wife and all that stuff. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. And to get that at that time really meant something to me. And I just wanted him to know that.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome for him to even kind of reach out like that. That's great. That speaks to the man, like you mentioned.
I was always really fair with him too. You know, I was critical of him as a GM. You know, as a guy that did a talk show, but he always felt like I was fair. Like he would text me at times, and you know, if I was critical of him on something, and he would explain a situation or, you know, where he was coming from or why he did what he did or was said, and. And we always had open dialogue, so that was good, you know. And I would have him on a lot when he was the GM on radio shows or whatever, and do interviews with him. But I was always fair with him. I was never malicious, and I think he respected the way that I covered his tenure as well.
So we mentioned, you know, Bernie, we mentioned Pelly Lindbergh, and we mentioned Ron Hextall. I can't let you go until we talk about the kid, you know, Carter Hart, and this team here. And to be honest, like I'm falling in love with this team. You know, I don't know in sports. I don't know what's better. Like, I mean, obviously a championship dominant team, a dynasty type of team. You know, I can't imagine having a team like that in the city. But to have, I don't know what's more exciting than that, or to have a good up and coming, really young team, real talented team, playing really well. And I just feel like this team right now is that, and they have a lot of great talent, young talent, and especially with the kid Carter Hart. Like, what are your thoughts on him? I know, just seeing social media and all that, I know you're a fan, obviously.
Yeah, I'm just so impressed. I'm just so impressed. And I got to stop saying for a 21-year-old. Well, today's his birthday.
Well, today, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so, but I got to stop saying that because I think that does him a disservice because
– yeah.
He's just he's so together. I think one of the things for a little insight kind of into who Carter is, and I've been really lucky to he's really open, and I get to talk to him a lot, and I'll text with him on occasion and stuff like that. And he's been really gracious with me. And he knows that, you know, that I'm a guy that's a goalie. So,
yeah.
You know, to kind of understand what he goes through. And I look at part of my job as to try and educate people on what the position is. You know, you see a guy give up a goal sometimes, you go, that's a bad goal. And sometimes I go, yeah, it is a bad goal. Or sometimes I'll explain, well, here's why that wasn't a bad goal. There's a layered screen, can't see the puck, can't track it, you know, double deflection. You know, why wasn't a stick there? Well, it's a double deflection. He's reading this, blah, blah, blah. But the thing that's so impressive about him is when I asked him one time, I said, you know, the history of goaltending in Philadelphia, it's been called a goalie graveyard. You know, how do you kind of deal with that? And he goes, that has nothing to do with me. Zero to do with me. And then he used a term that I use all the time and I've used for many, many years. And I've used it for 15 years in coaching kids at all levels, whether I'm coaching a varsity team, whether I'm coaching just goalies, whether I'm coaching, you know, my kid Steam when he was in Squirt Pee Wee or now Bantam. Control the controllable. He goes, that has nothing to do with me. I can't control that. I have to control the controllable. And to me, that was like, wow, man, that's a kid who gets it. And he does control the controllable. You know, as a goalie, it's really difficult because a goalie, just like any other position, is a competitor. But it's a position where you don't dictate the terms. So it's very difficult in the sense that it's a reactive position. So you don't have a lot of control on the ice per se. You try and gain as much as you can by either giving certain things or taking certain things and dictating that way. But ultimately, you're not in possession of what you're trying to stop. So it's difficult from that standpoint. And the way he approaches the position, the way he approaches his preparation is extremely rigid. Again, control the controllable. He controls every minute before he steps on that ice. It's why I think that a lot of goalies, after they get done, if they played at any decent level, become a little bit OCD because they have to control everything else because the thing they want to control the most, they can't. And that's the game because they're in a reactive position and bleeds off the ice. And, you know, Carter's a guy that, you know, on off days is doing concentration grids to keep his mind sharp. He does eye exercises to keep his eyes dialed in. He's rigid in his routine and nothing is going to break that. He was asked after game one against the Canadians about preparations for this. He said, nothing has changed. Nothing changes in my preparation. It's all exactly the same. And that's controlling the controllable. And then when you get on the ice, don't panic. His level of comfortability and calmness is a hallmark, just like it has been for Carey Price.
Yep.
And he just looks phenomenal. He's not overwhelmed by the situation because he's controlled every other element to make the game seem not bigger than it actually is. And that's a hard thing to do. He's worked with a performance coach and a sports psychologist since the age of 13, a guy named John Stevenson, who's worked with Braden Holtby and other NHL goalies. And he's trained his mind, his body, his psyche for the stage that he's on now. And he's having success already. And I expect him to be, you know, I mean, he may already be an elite goalie in the league. I mean, look at his numbers right now in the playoffs. I mean, he's got a 965 save percentage, a one goals against average, high danger chances. He's eating up with just great read of the play and puck tracking. He's tremendous. I mean, I couldn't be more impressed with who he is on the ice. Couple that with who he is off the ice.
Yeah, he looks like a great kid. I keep calling him kid. I guess I'm 40 years old. I can do that. But
yeah, he's still a kid. But yeah, but that shouldn't minimize obviously what he is already. It's amazing that at his age he is what he is. And what he is, he's an incredible goaltender that is going to be a great one for a long time if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and to come in this city with so much pressure for that position, and he's handling it. Awesome. Like if I could have wrote it out the way I would want, you know, a prospect to come in, especially a Flyers goaltender, you know, goalie, and how to handle it. He's doing the perfect job. And, you know,
he's no stranger to pressure though. I mean, he played for Team Canada in two World Juniors.
Yep.
And that means the world in that country. When you put that Maple Leaf sweater on and play international play, that means a ton. So pressure is something that he's dealt with before.
No. So Yeah, I guess just to round it out, you know, going back to Eric Lindros, when you look at, you know, his career, because like you said, a generational talent and one of only really a few that we have, but, you know, only played with at least with his time with the Flyers, only played in 70 games twice in his time here. Where would you put him as far like an all-time player? Do you think he's a top 50, top 25? Like where do you, Jason, rank Eric Lindros
in the league's history?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a really, really difficult question to answer. There was a period of time for 4 or 5 years where he was the best player on the planet, so that automatically puts you in the top 50, in my opinion, because there's not a lot of players that can say that. You know, Gordie Howe was the best player on the planet for a period of time, obviously Wayne. Lemieux may have been slightly better than Wayne for a year or two, but generally speaking, no. Crosby's been the best player on the planet basically since his second year in the league, maybe even his first year. It's just amazing how good he was. You look at guys like, you know, Orr and in the 70s. He's probably in the top 20 of the most dominant players of all time.
Yeah. Now, would you put him ahead of or below Bobby Clark as a player?
Bob goes ahead of him because Bob won two cups. Mm-hmm. And Bob also put up a ton of points. Now the errors are different,
right?
But still, Clarky was the ultimate leader. You know what I mean? He was a great player, a talented player, and knew how to play the game, especially in the era he was in. But yeah, Clarky's the greatest Flyer. He and Bernie, Lindros is a top five Flyer of all time. It's Clark. It's Barber. Clark, Bernie, Barber. And then you get into the conversation with Lindros around, you know, four.
Mm, okay. No, I have to agree with that too.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what year it was. I don't know if it was 96 or 98. And I know the Hockey News came out with like the 100 greatest players. And at that time they had Lindros in the top 50 already.
I think it was 98. You know, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
So, I mean, it goes to, and I think they had Yager like 37 or something like that. They were the only two current players on that list at that time. So yeah, it kind of speaks to what we're talking about. And yeah, I agree 100%. I think he is one of the top players of all time. One of the top 50 for sure players of all time. And if he would have stayed healthy, who knows, right? Like, it could have you know, it would be possibly top 10, top 5, so.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's the one thing against him is, you know, his career was cut short, you know. He didn't play 1,000 NHL games, and that's a shame because I would have liked to seen a lot more of him. But the way he played the game was just it didn't lend itself to a long career like that because he was so physical and targeted so much. I mean, I think he only played – I don't even think he played 800 games. I think he played like 760 games. So, which is, you know, a lot of players that only play 750 or under 800 games don't get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But he did. So, I mean, he had some great years too. I mean, he had 115-point season. You know, he's an average over a point per game as a player in his career. So, tremendous.
Yeah, and I think it also speaks that he changed the game. Like, he changed the game. He changed how people were drafting players. They started bringing in bigger defensemen. I can remember watching him running over everybody and then seeing Ed Jovanovski come in and push him back a little bit. Then you had Chara come in with the Islanders, push him back a little bit. And I was like, oh, boy, this is going to change pretty soon.
Yeah, a lot of big boys out there, no doubt. Even guys like Kasper Reitis that weren't that big were taking runs at him.
Yep.
Nah, well, Jason, I know – I don't want to speak, you know, put words in Jose's mouth, but I know we both are just so appreciative of you coming on and doing this and really talking, you know, Flyers past and present with us.
No problem, boys. You know me. I always love talking hockey. I talk about it all day, whether it's being taped or not.
No, and hopefully we can get you back on after. Hopefully the Flyers, you know, even though it's, you know, it's a strange season with the pandemic, but getting that Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah. Look, a lot of people said, I don't want them to come back if we can't be there to see it or have a parade. I'll take the cup any way I can get it, man. That's the heart. Right. You don't win the cup. You do not win the cup. You earn the cup. It's different than any other trophy in sports. It is, and this year you might have to win 19 games to do it. You know what I mean? It's so difficult to win it. It's why when you see guys win it, they are speechless. In 2010, when the Flyers lost it in that game 6 and on the Patrick Kane overtime goal, when I got done the broadcast, I went out and I sat on the Flyers bench probably like 11 o'clock at night. And I sat there at about 1 in the morning for about 2 hours and just watched them stay on the ice with the cup and their families, drinking beers, just having the time of their life. And I'm going, you just see what it means. You know, it takes everybody back to early morning car rides to games at 5:30 in the morning, waking up and it's still dark and freezing cold outside, traveling to games all over just to play the sport, dreaming that you're going to get a chance someday to touch that thing. And then when it happens, it melts the most grizzled athletes on the planet. And it's horrible that the Flyers lost that the way they did. Sitting there watching that, I was just like, wow, man. Seeing these guys appreciate what they just did and earning that thing was awesome. So it was very cool to kind of eavesdrop and to kind of be a voyeur and see how they reacted with that trophy and with their families.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say also extend to you my gratitude as well for coming on. And I appreciate everything you do on the radio and especially, you know, get a lot of hockey talk around here and, you know, not knocking anybody, but it's just the way it is. And, you know, I love it. You know, I so appreciate that. And, you know, I just want to say thank you again and just please keep doing what you're doing, man. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, I won't stop. You know, I caught a lot of shit for talking hockey at a time when it wasn't kind of the thing to do. So I don't plan to stop. I love the game. Mm-hmm. I don't care what level it's being played at. You'll find me at a rink if there's a 16U showcase of the team USI, you know, great USA hockey players. As long as they plug in a scoreboard and they're playing it, I tend to go watch. I'm at the rink all the time. I'll be there today all day. I've got a beer league game later tonight as well. So, I just love it, and I can't get enough of it. And it's become a huge part of my life. I'm trying to give back everything it's given me to young kids now, coaching, and it's meant the world. I think it's shaped who I am as a person. So I love talking about it, and it was a lot of fun being on with you boys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So definitely thank you to Mr. Jason Martinez from 97.5. And you can listen to him on the weekends on 97.5 and also on his Stick to Hockey podcast, which is awesome. And anyone, you know, catch it on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can listen to it. It's really just great.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it, boys.
Yep. All have right. a good one.
See you guys.
Jose, how was that?
No, that was great, man. And again, I'm glad he came on. I'm glad he took the time out to do this with us. And, you know, I know, you know, when we reached out to him, you know, right away, he was like, you know, when do you want to do it? And, you know, again, I wanted to tell him that because, you know, sports radio in the city, man, it's not a lot of hockey, you know, and he's the voice of hockey for me in mm-hmm. the city. And that's kind of what I told him, like, you know, that's why I wanted to kind of tell him to, you know, to, I don't want to say to his face, but like, I wanted to kind of just let him know
right.
that it's a lot of us out here that really, really appreciate that, man. And you know, it's awesome. I'm glad he was on. He had some great insight.
No, and you, I'll, you know, did it off air. I'll do it on air. Give you the credit. You reached out to him. You are the bigger hockey fan than I am. I like hockey history. But you, even with the history, know more than me, and even present day, you're a bigger fan than I am. So, you know, you started that thread to him, and you're right. He reached out right away, and I know how he's very good on air. I remember when, you know, I didn't expect him to talk about when he got let go last Halloween.
Yeah.
But I remember that, and it was a big deal. And I remember hearing, you know, the podcast, Tick the Hockey. I played it the other week, you know, in preparation for this. And hearing him, you know, have Ron Hextall on and talk about it and, you know, say thank you. So it's kind of like you did that to him, what he did to, you know, for Hextall a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and he also does a great job with, you know, like the Flyers Daily. Like I was listening to that a lot and just kind of getting insight on there. He breaks the games down. He, you know, he has guys on, current players on all the time. And, you know, it was funny because on one of the shows, I wanted to bring it up. I didn't want to keep him on here too long where we were talking about off the air. But, you know, he had asked a question on the show, and then, you know, he was just getting answers from, you know, people on Twitter and stuff like that. And, like, what was the reason? Like, what's the reason why you love hockey, right? This is right before the pandemic started, you know what I mean? So they cut the games out. So I guess, you know, he was just asking stuff like that. And it had me thinking, man. It had me thinking for a couple hours there. And I was just like, man, like, why do I love this sport so much, right? And, you know, doing a show like we do, like, it's about history. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, we're historians of the game, man. And we love the history of all sports. And, but for me, like, this sport has so much of it. Like, and it's so traditional based. Like, it's just, and I love that. Like, I absolutely love that from, you know, how the goalies, you know, like, for good luck, some goalies kind of smack the post around, like, you know what I mean, right before the game starts or right before action starts, and to playoff beards, to, you know, you can't hit the superstar, to, like, it's just, like, so much stuff, you know what I mean? Like, as an NFL, if you take a run at Carson Wentz, you're not going to get beat up. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, you might get pushes, a couple pushes and stuff like that, but in hockey, you take a run at a Crosby, you take a run at a McDavid, like, you're going to have to fight somebody probably. And I just love the tradition of the cup. Like, you know how hard it is. The tradition of, like, if you win the conference finals, you don't touch that trophy because it's bad luck, you know. And some people have kind of gone against that. I know Crosby went against that. A couple other players went against that. But traditionally, you don't touch that trophy because it can bring you bad luck in the finals. It's just – I love it, man. You know what I mean? And I'm so glad that the Flyers – are good, because it's like it's so much. Playoff hockey is the best best playoffs in sports. I know,
yeah,
NFL is one and done. I get the, like, the intensity of that, just that aspect. I know basketball is awesome. I know, you know, baseball in October is amazing, but there's nothing like playoff hockey.
No, the only thing I compare Stanley Cup to that's, you know, that can give it is March Madness to me.
Yes,
that's the only thing I think that gets it kind of is neck and neck with Stanley Cup playoff as far as the best postseason. And I think you're right. I look at it and he said it early, you know, on. I look at the sports that really, for better or for worse, sometimes are really entrenched in history. I look at hockey, I look at baseball and boxing. Mm-hmm. Those three, yeah, like, are really entrenched in history. And I love talking about all three, you know, that from a historic aspect. I think hockey has done the best job of trying to adapt and trying to, you know, get it into, no offense to the other sports, but this century, you know, and keep it going. But no, it's very true that the traditions and, you know, from, you know, as a Big Six franchise to, I know I don't seem like it, but I am very proud that those Broad Street Bullies, that's the first non-Big Six team to win a Stanley Cup. And the hate that they had, you know, from people in Boston and Ranger fans and all over, because they were bucking the tradition and were, you know, hated. They were loved in Philly, but hated everywhere else. It's an awesome history.
Yeah. And I just, and again, on Jason's show, like the Flyers Daily, like he mentioned, he was throwing out those stats of like the Flyers and, you know, their winning percentage. They were like third in the NHL over, I can't remember span of time, but it was a long time, you know, and it was a couple decades. And, you know, to be third in the NHL and win percentage, you know, says a lot about an organization. And the only issue is they just, the ultimate goal has eluded them. And, you know, I really feel like, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier, like what they have going right now, it's looking really, really good. And it's really exciting.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's a future show, because it is 45 years, the anniversary of the last, you know, winning their back to back. So maybe that's a future show that, you know, HBO did the Broad Street Bully documentary, and maybe, you know, breaking down just the Broad Street Bully. So that's something I always love doing. And maybe we can get that going, keep this hockey momentum going right now.
Don't tell me that, because you know where I'm going to go with that. But this was great. I'm glad he came on. This is really exciting. I apologize to the listeners about the technical difficulties, but you know that happens sometimes.
Yeah, and we'll talk afterwards and get that worked out. But
yep.
Yeah. For my main man, my partner, Jose Ruiz, I'm Jeremy Dove, and thanks for listening to In the Zone.
Peace.